All right. Thank you for that. And welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast and around the world on American Forces Radio Network. It's our pleasure to welcome to the show former big league player and manager Clint Hurdle. And I've got some baseball questions for him, as you might imagine. But Clint, let's start off with why you're here. And that's because you have been such a great supporter and advocate for the Prader-Willi Syndrome Association, something that is near and dear to you. It's a family thing. Tell us a little bit more about Prader-Willi Syndrome, please.
Rick, thanks for having me, first of all. And my son and I kind of chuckled at your rap song as we walked into this. So, well done. Well played. my wife and I, Carla, we had a daughter born 18 years ago. Her name was Madison Riley Hurdle. And she got kind of strung out in the NICU unit, man. We just couldn't figure out. There were some things that didn't seem right to the doctors. And a couple weeks in, after almost a dozen tests, they gave her one more test. And we said, well, maybe do one more, and then we're out. Just got tired of seeing needles stuck in her and, you know, no answers. And they gave her one more test and found out that she had Prader-Willi syndrome. And, Rick, that's a deletion of the 15th chromosome. Which affects your satiation function. You know, for us, we eat Thanksgiving dinner and we're full afterwards. These kids wake up hungry, very hungry. They go to bed hungry. They're hungry as long as they're awake throughout the day. Their motor skills, gross motor skills, fine motor skills are delayed. They're basically, you know, special needs children, special needs babies. Maddie has progressed and mainstreamed through school. She's a senior in high school this year. But it's not been without challenge or complication, and there's so many kids out there that are still diagnosed. We're just trying to be advocates for our daughter and many others and trying to help bring awareness to this syndrome.
Yeah, it's, you know, I honestly have never heard of it, so this is very important that you do speak out about it. Did they tell you what the occurrence is, like in the United States, how common this is?
Yeah, Rick, it's not very common. It's usually 1 in 12 to 15,000 babies born or diagnosed. It happens at conception. It's not something you grow into. I'm older. I'm 63. Your dad, Rick, how old are you, by the way?
I'm 55.
So you can maybe relate to this. Back in school, remember when the little yellow bus ought to pull up in front of school?
The short
bus,
and
the children
yeah.
would get off. Actually, we were so callous in my high school, we called them retards. They were usually slower, smaller, just not quite connected. They just seemed to be off a little bit. When you think about it, almost probably 50 to 60% of those kids had Prader-Willi syndrome, and it was undetected. This syndrome's only been on the medical books for about 45 years, maybe closing in on 50. And, you know, there's parts of Maddie that have developed to some degree. Most parts of Maddie are going to be 12 years old the rest of her life. However, she wants to fight and struggle and be a teenager. She wants to be 18. She wants to have friends. You know, she's got dreams as well, so it's finding that balance of supporting her, giving her things that can challenge her, and giving her some joy in her life to work at a part-time job, to be able to manifest a trolley system to get around a small town or a bus system. Living on their own is really not an option. Advanced education can be limited. There's only one or two recordable births that a Prader-Willi girl has had with a baby. So there were so many unanswered questions early on that Maddie actually did accomplish. She's accomplished a multitude of things based on love and support from a lot of people. The biggest lesson that my wife and I, Carla, have taken away from this, Rick, is that so many people serve our children and provide services that Carla and I could not provide, that my job could not provide, that no amount of money can change or benefit. It's the love and support of doctors and nurses and people committed to this cause and helping with special needs kids that have made her life have significance and have impact.
That's outstanding. Now, speaking more about guys our age, I'm a little bit younger than you, as we mentioned. You know, I grew up playing baseball like every American. I had two brothers. And, you know, back in the day, getting on the cover of SI, you know where I'm going here. You know, we would fight over Sports Illustrated, who could get it first. And I remember when I was in the eighth grade, there's you on the cover with the Royals, and it said, here's the guy, the next phenom, and it looks like you were laughing your ass off. How cool was that to be on the cover of SI saying, this is the guy?
Rick, it was cool until it wasn't cool. And as you can imagine, they walk you through this process. They actually told me they're photographing like almost two dozen guys in spring training, two dozen rookies. They wouldn't tell anybody who's on the cover. It's always a secret. And Willie Wilson, actually, who was our camp that year, turned out to be a very good big league player for a number of years. Willie and I were photographed and a host of other people. Well, that day when the cover came out, I was aware of the date they were going to launch the magazine. And like you, for many years, you know, that Sport Illustrated, when it came out, it was something everybody wanted, waited for, and to be on the cover. There supposedly was a jinx. I'm not going to say there is or there isn't. There have been a lot of people on the cover that have not been jinxed, people on the cover that have had a couple struggles afterwards. But I was walking into a 7-Eleven, Rick, and back in the day, at the age of 20, I'm going to guess 1977, the only magazines that were in a 7-Eleven were on the counter. It was Time, Newsweek, and Sports Illustrated. So I picked up my breakfast of champions. I think it was a quart of milk and a honey bun. I put it on the counter. I looked at the cashier. He looked at me. I looked at the magazines like I'd always just glance at them, see who was on Newsweek, see who was on Time. Check out SI. It was me. I looked back at him. He looked back at me. He went, oh, my. And I said, oh, my. And I just walked out. I left the honey bun. I left the milk. I just got out of there. That's really paralyzing.
That's awesome. You know, I was covering the A's in the 90s on TV, and Willie Wilson was on the A's, and he once gave me a signed pair of his underpants, which I kept, which is kind of weird. But since you brought up the great Willie Wilson, I want to ask you, too, about the fact that Tony La Russa is back, and he's a lot older than you are. Does that give you a little oomph, like, hey, maybe I'll try it again?
No, it didn't. God bless Tony. Tony and I have become friends over the years. We managed quite a bit against each other. I used to have one story that I used three different times a year. Whenever we play a Torrey team, a La Russa team, or a Cox team, I tell my team, you guys are going to need to have a really good series because I guarantee I'm going to get outmanaged. I spent 45 years in uniform, Rick. I was grateful and thankful for each and every one of them. My story's a little different. Everybody's story is different. I have two teenagers at home. I have a special needs daughter. It's a senior in high school. I have a son who's 16, just engaging right in the tender part of high school, the middle of it. And it was just, for me, it's just time to be home. It's time to be home with Carla. It's time to be home with these kids. If baseball opens the door for me in some other shape, fashion, or form, it's one I'd probably check into to see if I could help. But there'll be no more. Yeah, put the uniform in the closet.
Gotcha. A couple more questions for Clint Hurdle, former manager of the year. Just today, you know, we got the news about the Hall of Fame and Curt Schilling saying, you know, take me off the list for the 10th year. I'm not going to be judged by these writers. And now the Hall of Fame has, or the writers have come back saying he can't control the ballot and he's going to be on it. What are your thoughts about that? And I know it's a little sour grapes, obviously, but what do you think about Curt's stance?
Well, you know, everybody's got an opinion. And that's one thing I learned being a manager. Everybody could do my job better than me most days. You love the give and take with the press. We were so fortunate in baseball. We got to meet with the press twice a day. You know, not just once or once a week or twice a week. Kurt's got his own thoughts and his own reasoning behind it. I've read some of the articles, and I think the writers have their own thoughts and why they want to keep him on. At the end of the day, it'll get settled one way or the other. I talked to another friend of mine, very close friend of mine, Todd Helton, who actually had a spike in votes. You know, yeah. I think he's in the third year. Like he said, it's a 10-year race for him. He just hopes he can keep moving the chains moving forward. I didn't have that problem. I got no votes. I don't even think I was put up for a vote. So all I know is this. Those men that are in there, those are some fantastic careers. And it's really kind of a sad year for us and how many Hall of Famers that we've lost. So
yeah,
Kurt beat my teams up three different times with three different teams. I can remember one year in Colorado, we played them 19 times, and either he or Randy Johnson threw against us 10 times. And it wasn't really fair because we weren't that good and both of them really were. So, you know, I honor Kurt's thoughts and opinions, but the baseball writers, they've got their own thoughts as well. How'd I dance around that one?
That's pretty good. And I got to say for Helton, too, with Larry Walker getting in, that whole Coors Field thing, maybe that's gone away. So, yeah, we'll keep our fingers crossed for him. One more question for you. Now with a guy starting on second in extras and pitchers got to pitch to three guys unless they get through an inning, how would that change things for you as a manager? Does it simplify it or does it just clog it all up more?
Well, I think it all depends on how much of a growth mindset you have. I've got some buddies that I think it locked up. I've got some other buddies that I think said, okay, this is just different strategy. It's still strategy. It's just different. Jimmy Leland and I have talked about this. We beat this around for hours. It does change the old way of managing, you know, where you could come in and you could leverage your relievers, especially if another team, you know, if you're talking Pujols and Edmonds back of the day, and then you go back right-handed with Roland or however that was stacked up, it's tough to leave a left-hander in there for those three hitters. However, we're also trying to find a way to keep all the fan bases engaged. So I understand why they're doing it. That one is still, I'm warming up to it. If it sticks, it's going to stick. The one I thought was kind of like the wild card. I can remember when the wild card came up, when Seelig came up with that plan, everybody threw their hands up in the air and said he was crazy. It's turned out to be one of the best things ever because it keeps so many cities engaged longer in a pennant race with hope. But the seven-inning doubleheader, initially, you know, I know a bunch of guys that threw their hands up. Traditional values, we can't do this. Man, I'd be a big fan of a seven-inning doubleheader just because it saves your pitching. And sometimes in Coors Field, you know, you get wiped out anyway with your pitching. But seven-inning doubleheaders, I do think we're trying to be smart to keep everybody engaged because the games are too long and there's not enough action. I think we're all in agreement on that. It's a home run, it's a walk, or a strikeout. So I do believe they're trying to find ways to heighten the level of interest and the level of activity.
Very well said. We just got about a minute here. How can people find out more if they want to help with the Prader-Willi syndrome, Clint?
You can go to our website at pwsa.usa.org. I've been the national spokesperson for 16 years. There's a lot of good things going on, and you may know of a family with a child that may be overweight, maybe a little slow to learn, maybe a little methodical in their movements. There's still so many kids out there, Rick, that are undiagnosed. Like you said, I had never heard of it when Maddie was diagnosed. If we got 10 people together, there may be one of us or two of us that have ever heard of it. It is still so far under the radar that it's scary and it's sad. So we're just trying to get out there and let people know.
There he is, Clint Hurdle, doing great work. Hey, Clint, great having you on, man. And let's catch up down the road.
Anytime, Rick. Thank you. Thank you very much for your support.
Great stuff. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a quick break. Come on back on Sports Byline.